Kakoka, and welcome to Haydn Behind the Music Stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and with me is Julia Floberg-Peterson, who is a cellist and singer-songwriter based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. She is the founder of the Delphia Cello Quartet and is a member of Lady Spruce, a string folk trio, and has two albums out, Aporia and Two Roads to Nowhere, available on Spotify and Bandcamp. And we'll be talking about raising her 16 chickens. Welcome, Julia. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Patty.
Yeah. So I first met you in a sort of, well, I mean, I first went and saw you guys, saw the Delphia Cello Quartet perform at Ice House. More to, you know, Nora was in the group at that point, and Ice House is only about a few blocks away from me, so it was an easy commute, let's say, to go watch that concert. And you guys were playing Villa-Lobos Bacchianus Brasileiras number one, I believe, at that point. So it was like a big cello gathering, and a lot of people that, this was, of course, pre-COVID, so there was a lot of musicians that showed up to that concert. But then I heard from Nora that there was an opening in Delphia, and so long story short, I'm also now a part of the quartet, which I'm really grateful for, because not only do I get to play some of my cello quartet arrangements again, I get to play yours, which are so great.
Yes, I'm so happy you were at that show, because that's the biggest performance we ever did. And it's been great having you in the group. We only had one other member who arranged up to this point, so it's really nice to have you, because you have you're so prolific at it.
Oh, well.
There are so many
that
we still haven't touched.
That's true. That's true. It's nice to air them out again, because the last time I even arranged or played them, these arrangements were back in my busking days in San Francisco. And it's also really fun to play. You have a lot of cello quartet arrangements too. So it's always fun to, you know, learn new ways of arranging and also learn your songs. Like, I love, one of my favorite ones that you've done is Zombie by the Cranberries.
Yes, that's one of our most popular ones. And that was also later on. When I first started arranging for the quartet, I had never done it before. So I kind of just dove in and wanted to see what I could come up with. And now, at this point, I feel like I've started to discover what works and what doesn't work. And I've also learned there are like different styles you can arrange in. For example, I really like the ones you have that are like super rock out cello. Whereas the first arrangements I did were like really mellow legato.
Yeah, but those are beautiful too.
And, cello tunes.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many fifths in mine that it's like sometimes a little bit tiresome in the hands. But anyway, yeah, it's been so great. And performing with Delphia is always a little cherry on top of all the other performances I do in the cities. So thanks for letting me join.
Yeah, of course.
So what's your most insane performance story?
I took an improv course when I was in college.
Oh.
The professor's name was Kuei Dong. And at the end of the course, we did a culminating performance, which was surprisingly well attended because the school had a contemporary music program with all these experimental composers working a lot in like electronic music. So I think the idea of seeing an improv performance was enticing. The professor is pretty eccentric though. And so we were up there with a variety of instruments, the ones that we played, like there was piano and cello and violin and I can't remember what else. But there was a saxophone player who played too loud.
Oh, no.
So the professor made him stand in the back corner of the recital hall facing the wall for the entire performance. And nothing was planned, so we just started playing. And whenever things started to get too boring, the professor would come up and pick a random instrument and just start making loud noises on it.
Okay.
In the middle of the performance.
That's a choice.
And there are a variety of like percussive instruments that she had brought just to keep things interesting. So one of them were these like tubes that you spin around in the air and make like a whirring sound. So halfway through it, about four of us dropped our instruments and just started spinning tubes for a while. In the meantime, the saxophone player, who never stops playing loudly, is in the corner just going... So I think that was the strangest performance I've ever been a part of.
How long did that last? And how
did it... It's been on a long time because I had a friend in the class who was always at odds with me because I always wanted to control when it was ending. I don't know why. That was just part of my personality to be like, I'm ready for this to be done and I'm going to try to like trail it off.
Yeah.
And my friend would look at me, and as soon as I had done that, he would start making noises on the piano again. Like, no, we're not done. So it went on for like over an hour. And then it finally ended just because everyone happened to stop playing at the same time for long enough that people started clapping.
Good. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Wow. Did it feel like awkward, or were you like really in the moment, or was it just a weird out of body experience? Like I've never done a like live jam session like that before. Like, sure, I've done it with like friends over some candles and wine and stuff like that, but like nothing very performative.
That was my first time trying out free improvisation, and I felt very silly.
Okay.
The whole time. I think other people in the class got like really into it, like in the zone.
Okay.
And I just felt like it was
not for you.
Like it was very silly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it expanded the realm of possibilities for you by taking that class. Or maybe not.
Exactly. I think the whole idea is exploration of sound. So you come up with new ideas of like what sounds you can make and what possible sound combinations you can have.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that story. Can you tell me about your pets?
I have two dogs. They're both lab mixes. One of them is Georgia.
Uh-huh.
The other one is Tornado.
Oh.
They're both napping on the couch right now.
Aw.
They do that a lot.
How old are they?
Georgia is probably 8. We're not sure because she's a rescue dog.
Okay.
And Tornado will be 3 in March.
Oh, wow. Okay. So still kind of on the pup side of things.
Oh, yeah. And he acts like a puppy. First of all, he never really grew into his body, so he's pretty small and lanky and very high energy. So you would still think he is a puppy.
So
he's aptly named Tornado.
Yeah, I was going to say. Okay, yeah. Well, give him little pets for me.
Okay.
Here you go, Tornado. Actually, you're doing it right now. Oh, okay. All right. Are you ready for some Spitfire questions?
Yes.
Okay. Mahler or Bruckner?
Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel?
Oh, it's so hard. Ravel.
Okay. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Appetizer or dessert?
Dessert.
Sparkling or still water?
Sparkling.
Fan favorite question, alternate universe musical instrument?
Upright bass.
Oh, okay. I guess it kind of makes sense in the cello quartet anyway. You tend to play the bass lines.
Yeah, it's probably because I secretly wish I played bass.
Yeah. Well, it's never too late.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Early bird or night owl?
Night owl.
Okay. Pandemic guilty pleasure?
I delayed because... Oh, pandemic guilty pleasure.
Oh, well, do you want to explain?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
Chocolate.
Okay, fair enough.
Does that count?
Yes, it does. Are you a dark chocolate person, or are you like a milk or a white, or where in the mix of things?
I like all chocolate.
All chocolate. Okay. Non-discriminatory. Okay, good. Favorite professor shout out?
Andrew Mark and Kuei Dong, the improv.
Despite the silliness, or because of the silliness?
Yeah, probably because of.
Okay.
She was great. Yeah.
Most inspired musical hero of any genre?
Jacqueline Dupre.
Ugh, I mean, yeah.
I feel like everyone says that, but I think I had a crush on her for like at least 10 years of my life.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying though. I don't know. Tell me if you feel the same way, but I feel like cellists of our particular generation found her to be the sole inspiration to become a cellist. Either that or it was Rostropovich, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know if people of a younger generation now would say the same, if like Jacqueline Dupre would be their go-to inspiration cellist, or if it would be some other person. I'm just curious. I want to ask around. But I just feel like it's so...
Yeah.
Yeah, like Jacqueline Dupre is such a common inspiration. Amazing musicianship. Amazing timing, too, in my opinion. Just takes things... Her rubato is so... It tends to be on the slower side of things, but she does so in a way that really turns that screw that then you're like, oh, that's what I've been wanting to feel. You know, that delayed satisfaction. She's wonderful. It goes without saying. Mm-hmm. Most transformative performance experience?
Aporia.
Okay.
Named after the album I recorded. I did it at the Ice House, which I guess is the place where I always perform.
Yeah.
And it was with the original cello quartet and 4 dancers. And we even hired a lighting engineer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The dancers had choreographed the entire album, which is a combination of poetry and original songs.
Very cool.
It turned into a theater. Yeah. It ended up being a theater performance. It was really amazing.
Yeah. All right, Julia, you completed both Spitfire questions. Congratulations.
Great. Thanks, Patty. That was worth it.
Okay. So, Julia, can you walk me through your musical origin story? How did you discover music? How did you discover the cello? When did you decide that was going to be your path in life? And all the steps to where you are today?
I started playing cello when I was 5.
Wow.
Because I have 4 older siblings who were all playing an instrument, and I felt really left out. So I went up to my mom, and I was like, so when do I get to play an instrument?
Uh-huh.
And she said, you can play an instrument. I've always loved the cello, so you're going to play the cello.
Oh, okay.
So my mom decided for me. I had no idea what a cello was. I'd never heard one before.
What did your other siblings play?
My oldest brother and sister started on piano, mm-hmm. and then my brother ended up switching to guitar, and my sister switched to clarinet. And then my other 2 sisters, who are identical twins, they both played violin.
Oh, gosh. You'd think that they would not want to play the same instrument, but...
I don't know why that happened. I think that was a decision made by my dad. I think he said, you're going to play violin, and I'm going to play violin too. So all 3 of them were like in the study practicing beginner Suzuki violin together.
Oh, cute. Okay, got you. Yeah.
Gosh, I just loved it so much. So I ended up sticking with it more than any of my other siblings all the way through high school. Doing, you know, all the lessons and GITSEs in Minneapolis. And then I got to college and I didn't know I was going to study music. But by my sophomore year, I found myself spending all my time doing that.
Oh.
I went to Dartmouth College, which has a pretty small music department.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up being in like 2 or 3 chamber groups every semester, and I was playing in the orchestra, and I was just doing a lot of playing and practicing. So I decided to get more serious about it, and I started going to summer festivals, started thinking I would maybe apply to master's programs. And then when it came time to actually apply to master's programs, I had just spent a summer at Aspen Music Festival, which is giant, and I just had the worst time.
Oh, really?
Which is, of course, it's totally on me. It's nothing about the festival. It's a great festival with wonderful teachers and amazing orchestras. But I think at that time I had just burnt out.
Fair enough.
Yeah, practicing orchestral repertoire and excerpts and just feeling very critical of my playing and feeling like there was no future.
Wow.
So I stopped playing for like 2 or 3 years after that and ended up just like working for an art center for a while. I worked in a music conservatory office for a while. And then I started getting back into it because I started learning other instruments.
Okay, so yeah, so when you say did you just cold turkey stopped playing cello altogether?
Yeah.
Oh, so you like put it in the closet?
Yeah, it was still in my house. I just never played it.
Wow. How did that kind of shift feel for you? Like, I mean, obviously it was something that was very mentally like you were done. Yeah, like what was that like for you?
Oh, it was sad. I mean, I missed it, but I think I just felt that I wasn't going anywhere and I wasn't enjoying playing anymore.
Okay. Even if it was, you know, a sight reading situation, like a fun party, low pressure environment, like it still was not enjoyable?
Oh, I think that was all the timing, right? Because I had just finished college and I didn't apply to any other programs and I had been in a situation where I didn't know any musicians anymore, right?
Oh, I
see. It was just me with my cello.
Yeah.
So I didn't have anybody to jam with or anything.
Got it.
That was probably the problem, is I no longer had my team around me.
Okay. So you said that by experimenting with other instruments is how you got back to playing cello again, right?
Yeah, I started learning guitar, I started learning mandolin, and then I started picking up the cello again, and then I was living in Boston at the time, so I started taking lessons with a professor at Berkeley named Eugene Friesen, mm-hmm. who's like the cello improv guy. And I did like a 2-week camp with him, and then I ended up realizing I loved the cello again and realized how much I had missed it. And so I got back on the cello track.
So sorry to back this up one more time, but when you started learning guitar and mandolin, what drew you to those instruments?
I think I walked into a music store one day and I said, how much is that guitar?
Okay. So
yeah, that's the only thing I remember why. I don't remember why it was guitar. I think I just saw it on the wall and was like, that seems like it'd be fun.
And a mandolin is similar for that, but also kind of like similar in tuning to a violin, so maybe a little bit easier to pick up.
Yeah, exactly. The mandolin really is smaller. That's the reason I picked up that one.
Oh, okay.
It's just easier easier to carry around.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to see, and forgive me if I'm, again, trying to, like, impose ideas onto your experience, but is it because you were experimenting with those instruments that led to other genres that made you then reflect back on the cello and say, hey, it doesn't have to be in this one direction. It doesn't have to be only classical, only orchestral excerpts and things like that, that you can utilize the cello musically in very different arenas of genres.
Oh, absolutely. And because I was learning different instruments, I was running into musicians who weren't classical musicians, who right. had a different perspective on how they approach music and how they listen to music. Then especially when I moved back to Minneapolis and started playing with people here, I ended up interacting with a lot of musicians who don't play classical music at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't even read music, but are still excellent musicians. And then that ended up opening up my ears to ways I could listen and play music that I hadn't before.
Yeah, I find that really interesting. And also, I feel like the funnel that is music school and music festivals puts you through that, as I say, funnel of only one direction. But you are able to take a break from that and then discover new musicians who aren't so trained and pigeonholed in some way to do only one thing.
Yeah, and it was just fresh, you know? It was a fresh approach to music. And I think that's what I needed, because I feel like I just had gotten so stuck
yeah.
in a certain way of playing music that I don't think I was even listening anymore, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, because at the highest level of any music that you're going for, you almost get to this hyper-critical state of listening to intonation, listening to rhythm in such a strict, this is the only correct way of doing it kind of mentality, which is almost anti-music. It's anti-expression, because expression should be, right? Yeah, expression is just, you know, you got to have some chops. And I think that's what, like, the higher education is trying to get you, is to get just that, like, ability for those chops, but eventually it kind of loses some soul.
Oh yeah. And yeah, don't get me wrong, it is work. I mean, that's what's hard about teaching, is you want it to be fun learning an instrument, but it's hard work.
Yeah.
And it's going to be gritty and frustrating and maybe boring sometimes, but mm-hmm. if you put in the hard work and are able to keep the soul, it's so wonderful.
Yeah, well, okay, anyway, yeah, so
that's the goal.
Yeah. So you said you moved back to the Twin Cities and started doing a lot more projects that were not necessarily based in strictly classical music. Can you elaborate on some more of those? You know, you started at least a Delphia cello quartet with that in mind.
Well, let's see. When I first moved back, I was going to a lot of open mics where there would be like singer-songwriters, and I would play with people who were doing the open mic, or I would play some of my own songs because I was writing songs at that point. Or Adam Conrad had this monthly group called Improvistra, which was really fun, an improvising orchestra. That's actually how I met my husband.
Oh.
So I was going to those. I was going to Jazz Central on Monday nights for the jazz jam. Mm-hmm. I never got very good at those ones, but those mm-hmm. are always pretty fun. I ended up collaborating with like a lot of local singer-songwriters and musicians who wanted cello like on an album.
Sure.
Or they wanted a cello on a show.
Yeah.
And I just started networking in that scene. And then mm-hmm. through all that, that's how I ended up starting Delphia. And that's how I ended up joining Lady Spruce. And I had a group called Mestifonia at one point that played music from the Iberian Peninsula and South America.
Okay, awesome.
That was really fun.
So another question I had was, how did you get into singer-songwriting? I mean, I'll have to admit, I did once take a songwriting class in undergrad. And so I've written two or two and a half songs, one of which is titled Cigarettes and Booze and Rock and Roll, which is like... So bad.
That's awesome.
That was the collab. It's, oh my gosh, I've only showed it to a very small group of friends. That's the funniest one out of all of them. But I know how hard it is to write songs. So I'm like, how did you get into it? And what do you look for? What's your inspiration behind your songs?
I think I started writing songs just because I was experiencing a lot of emotions in my 20s, and I felt the need to channel them somewhere. And it just ended up, I can't remember why it happened. I started keeping little journals where I started writing stuff down, and then from there it ended up being poems, and then they started becoming songs. So it's just kind of a gradual process of me feeling like I needed to get a lot of things out of my system.
Uh-huh. So I think this is always one of those FAQs with singer-songwriting, is like, how do you start with the lyrics and then find the melody, or does the melody inspire the lyrics, or et cetera, you know, vice versa?
It depends. Sometimes it starts by you're just like playing around on an instrument and you get a melodic idea,
mm-hmm.
and then that turns into a melody and then you fit words along with it. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's like a piece of some lyrics that I find enticing that like pop into my brain. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I want to go somewhere with that. Mm-hmm. So then the lyrics lead the way and then the music end up supporting them.
I see.
It rarely happens at the same time. I always think that would be ideal because I often find when I end up writing the lyrics first and then add the chords and the melody, it doesn't quite work as well.
Yeah.
As when you have a beautiful melody that you can add the words to.
Because yeah.
if you go from the words, I find that my melodies don't tend to be as beautiful as when you approach it from the musical side. The music tends to carry the lyrics.
That makes sense to me, actually, because, yeah, it's like you're almost focused too much on the digital word. So then the melody kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so what are some upcoming projects that you have lined up?
Things are pretty quiet right now because I'm so focused on the homestead.
Okay.
My husband and I bought a place in Malacca with 8 acres. So a lot of our extra energy right now is going into turning the place into a working hobby farm.
Awesome. Okay, so
that's
you're
kind of where all of our energy is going.
So that's like you're kind of becoming a farmer a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's the idea.
Oh, awesome. I had no idea. Okay.
Oh, that's why we have so many chickens. That's just our first project.
Oh, okay.
Start small.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely get talking about your chickens in a second. I did, though, just want to say that at least with Delphia, we did this really cool project with Kotobo during the pandemic where we played with their bows, a few of our arrangements, and there was a video project. So I just wanted to let our listeners know about that if they wanted to watch the both of us play. I think there's 2 of your arrangements and 1 of mine.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they all turned out really well.
I think
those
so.
Great videos.
Yeah. That was such a fun day too. Although I have to say, I like did that accidental put my food on top of my car and then drove off. So I didn't get to keep my food.
Oh, no.
I know. It was sad. I think it was really good hummus or something. I was like, no, I missed the hummus. Anyway. Okay. Well, are you ready to take a break?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. We'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. So I forgot to ask you, Julia, about your albums, Aporia and 2 Roads to Nowhere. Before we talk about your chickens, can we talk about your inspiration behind those albums or what it was like to produce them?
Yeah, they ended up being very different projects. The first album I recorded, Aporia, was a combination of poetry and songs that I had written in my mid-20s, largely inspired by when I was living in Boston and then when I went traveling through Europe for 3 months on my own. So that provided lots of stuff.
Wow.
A lot of content, a lot of inspiration.
Where did you go to in Europe?
I flew to Portugal, and then from there I had one of those train passes, so I just went around for a while.
Yeah.
And I ended up in Turkey at the end.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a great trip.
That sounds super inspiring.
It was also pretty lonely, so.
Aw.
But when you travel by yourself, it's like all the emotions, right?
Yeah.
It's like the most amazing thing ever, and then there are times when you're by yourself and you don't know how to get to the place you're staying and you don't speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally lost and mm-hmm. you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like a little scary.
It builds a lot of confidence. Yeah, a little scary, but it builds a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
It's like if you can be in those situations by yourself, you're like, yeah, I can figure out stuff on my own.
Yeah.
I'm very capable.
Okay, so Aporia is what we talked about as well as that Ice House concert that you did that was your most transformative experience. What about 2 Roads to Nowhere?
2 Roads to Nowhere was, I felt like Aporia was so sad and serious. There are like some moments in some of the poems that are like kind of scary. I listened to it a little while ago and I was like, gosh, this is kind of spooky. So 2 Roads to Nowhere was all songs I'd written when I was in Minneapolis. A lot of them when I was with my husband, when we were dating, or mm-hmm. when, you know, I was reconnecting with old friends. So it's just a much happier album.
Okay.
A very much happier place. And also a very different sounding because Aporia was just my cello and my voice. Very
oh, okay.
sparse.
Yeah.
Then 2 Roads to Nowhere was like with a whole rock band.
Oh.
So it's like acoustic and electric guitar and drum kit. And piano and organ and electric bass. So
and the kitchen sink.
Fiddle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very different.
Wow.
It's very fun.
Obviously, it's like there's so much diversity in your whole creative sound world and everything. I mean, from the cello quartet to Aporia and 2 Roads to Nowhere. So where can we I know I briefly said at the beginning, at least Spotify and Bandcamp. Are there any other places that people can find those albums?
No, Spotify and Bandcamp. And then okay. Apple Music.
Okay.
YouTube.
Okay. YouTube. You know, okay.
They're on YouTube. Yeah.
All right. Okay. But now I want to talk about your chickens. So I tried my best. I don't even think it was the greatest Job impression of chickens from Arrested Development. But we are going to talk about your chickens right now. So you talked about you're getting into farming and you recently bought an 8-acre property with a barn and you're raising chickens. So how did you, I mean, I was going to say, how did you get into it? But it's like, well, you're a farmer now, kind of, right?
Well, eventually. Right now, I don't think farmers would call us even close to being farmers.
Okay.
We have like a glorified backyard. But
okay.
one day we'll be hobby farmers. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you didn't inherit these chickens, did you?
No, we just bought them off Craigslist. People are selling chickens all the time. Chickens, cows, pigs.
Oh.
There's a whole farm and garden section of Craigslist.
Oh my God.
Rabbits, ducks. Oh yeah. Tractors.
I have no idea. Well, okay. Maybe tractors. But I didn't realize livestock was being traded on Craigslist. Is it?
Oh yeah. Hot commodity.
Wow. Okay. So you just bought some chickens off of Craigslist.
Yeah. So there were people who had hens and it just wasn't working out for one reason or another.
Oh,
so we
okay.
got 6 from one woman in July and then we got the other 10 in September.
So when you say that it didn't work out for one reason or another, is that because you have to be careful about behavioral things between chickens? I mean, is it similar to like cats in a way or dogs introducing pets to one another?
Well, with the first woman, she had left the coop door open and an animal had gotten in and killed most of the chickens. So the 6 that we bought were the only ones. I know, it was sad.
Yeah.
But it sounded like that wasn't the first time it had happened. They had tried to have chickens 3 or 4 times and the chickens kept dying.
Well, okay.
So it's they decided it was time to not have chickens anymore.
Okay.
So I think that was more of the situation they were in. There were too many predators and
yeah.
couldn't keep the chickens alive. The other woman, the 10 that we got in September, she just had too many. It was just too many chickens to feed and it was just annoying for her. So she just wanted to get rid of them.
Okay. So what do you have to do to even start raising chickens?
You need to have a coop. You need to have a little house where they can live. And you need to have a place where they can run around during the day. And if they're hens, if they're laying hens, you need to have nest boxes. So chickens like to lay their eggs in the same place every day.
Aww.
Just not like ducks or geese. Mm-hmm. Ducks will just lay their eggs wherever. They don't care. They're like, oh, there's an egg. Just
like
lay
poop
it
one
there.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. Chickens like to go into like a tiny little box with straw. It's really cozy and kind of dark. And they like to lay their egg in there.
Uh-huh.
Which is nice for us because it's always in the same place.
Right.
So you need a coop. You need a nest box. And you need what's called a yard. Just a place for them to run around.
Okay.
Now, once chickens know where their house is, they'll go back there every night. So you can just let your chickens wander around free,
mm-hmm.
which we would love to do, but we have 2 dogs that would love to get their mouths
yeah.
on some chickens.
They say yummy, yummy chicken.
We have like a fence. Yeah.
yeah.
So we have a fenced in area that actually goes into the woods. So the chickens like to perch like in the trees,
Aww.
On the branches. It's very cute.
Yeah. Yeah. Is the coop heated at all during the winter?
Yeah, we have heat lamps out there. They can actually go down pretty low and be fine, but their wattle on the top of their head can get frostbitten.
Oh.
They also don't like to get their feet cold.
Right.
Yeah, so when it snows, they don't like going outside because they don't like putting their chicken feet in the snow.
I don't blame them. Can you, like, knit little chicken booties for them or something? Like, are there little, like, shoes?
Pretty, they would probably appreciate that because they feel pretty cooped up right now, literally.
Aww. Yeah, yeah. That's, like, the only time that you can actually really say that. So what varieties of chicken? Because I know there's like a ton of varieties. And I know the other day I was asking you about it, but can you share with me again the variety of chickens that you have and briefly kind of describe their colors and looks?
Yeah. So since we got the chickens from other people, we're not entirely sure about some of them. We do know we have some Rhode Island Reds, which are kind of like brownish red roosters.
Mm-hmm.
We have some Wyandottes with a W, Wyandotte. Mm-hmm. And they're like black with white spots. I feel like they're the kind of chickens they have run in wild in Hawaii.
Okay.
So we have one rooster who's a Wyandotte and has like a big green tail.
Mm.
And then, gosh, what else do we have? We have one Lavender Orpington that's like a gray colored chicken. And we have
I was gonna say, is it purple?
Australorp. I know, you would think so, but it's really grayish.
Okay.
I don't know why they call it lavender.
Lavender.
And then we have a handful of Australorps, which are black chickens with like a green disco sheen on their feathers.
So oh,
when they
cool.
walk around, they like shimmer green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I feel like that would be my preferred coating if I was a chicken and had a choice in the matter, but Okay.
And it always amazes me how soft their feathers are. They're very soft.
Yeah. Do you think that they know who you are? Or do you have like a animal person connection? Okay.
Well, I mean, they know who we are because when I walk up to their yard, they come running because they're like, it's the food person. That's sure. The food lady. What did you bring us, food lady? Because we can feed them chicken feed, but you can also feed them any variety of chicken scraps. I mean, not chicken scraps, kitchen scraps.
Oh, okay.
So you can.
I was like, are they cannibals?
You know, like. No. So, you know, left things that would normally go in the compost bin will just go in the chicken yard. And that they usually love that stuff. Like an apple core.
Oh,
so
really?
Good.
Oh.
Or like a piece of stale bread. Oh, they'll go crazy for that.
Oh, wow.
Or if during the summer we had corn and you throw them the corn cob, that's they'll like the best ever. They love corn.
They'll eat the corn cob?
They peck it bare. So it becomes like a little skeleton.
Oh, weird. Corn cob. Okay.
Yeah.
Got you. Yeah. So that also leads me to another. So I know you mentioned chicken feed and stuff, but how often do you feed them? Like, what's the kind of feeding routine for them and portions?
So the chickens have morning chores. So when you wake up in the morning, you open their door so they can go out into their yard and you feed them. And we just have like a scooper, and one scoop is like the right amount.
For all 16.
Some people get very mathematical about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Some people get mathematical and you can like weigh the amount of food that you're giving them. We're not doing that. You just give them a scoop of food.
Okay.
And then in the afternoon, you usually have to feed them again in the afternoon. And then at night, they go into their house at sunset as soon as it gets dark. Mm-hmm. And you just have to close their door to make sure that predators can't get in.
Right. Are there any predators around you that, or what are there predators around your property?
For predators, we've seen tracks of fox. It's wintertime, so we can actually see who's out there.
Yeah.
So we know the fox is out there. There are definitely raccoons around.
Wow. Raccoons would eat a chicken?
Oh, absolutely. Or possum. Possum would definitely eat a chicken.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't eat the whole bird, but they'll eat parts of it. And chickens can't really defend themselves.
No, probably not. Yeah.
No.
Poor babies.
And then the thing to watch out for that we have no control over is birds of prey.
Right.
Like eagles or hawks. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I guess those guys aren't around yet, though. That's more like the summer, right? I feel like, do they migrate, actually?
Yeah. Eagles migrate. I think hawks stick around.
Okay.
It really depends on if they have access to open water.
Mm-hmm.
So if the water freezes, then they'll migrate somewhere where there's still open water.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Get the fish instead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not my chickens.
Yeah. Have you named any of your chickens?
No, we don't name them.
Oh.
But our nieces have named them all. But I just wonder if they can actually keep track of them.
Of which one is which?
Exactly. We refer to them, like the gray one we call Ghost Chicken.
Okay.
Or the smallest one we call Chicken Little.
Aw, right? Okay.
So they have nicknames.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned that you had a rooster. Are you planning on having more chickens with the rooster around? Does the rooster also do the cock-a-doodle-doo every morning?
Oh, absolutely. The rooster likes to cock-a-doodle-doo in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It is not related to the time of day.
Oh, so nonstop.
No. I'm not sure what causes him to do it.
Just feels the need to sing, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we probably will have some little baby chicks come springtime. It makes the most sense, but we haven't quite planned it out yet.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's like something that, if it's like breeding with like a puppy mill or something similar, or that's like very scientific or human organized, or if it's just like, oh, whoops, they just happen to pop out babies or something like that. It seems like it's more the latter.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I do wonder if we left a couple eggs out there, I wonder what would happen to them. Maybe they would just end up being chicks.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But for the meantime, how many eggs do you think you produce a week or a day? Whatever would make the most sense to quantify.
Oh, gosh. So we have 14 laying hens right now. So that means we have the possibility of getting 14 eggs a day. But chickens don't lay eggs every day. Today, we got 14 eggs.
Oh, wow.
But yesterday, I think we only got maybe 10.
Okay.
So it really depends on the day. So, gosh, we're probably getting 6 or 7 dozen eggs a week.
Wow. That's so many eggs.
That's too many eggs.
I know you give some away, but other than that, have you come up with any creative things to do with your eggs that are in surplus? I guess they last a really long time, right? Or
yeah, they last a long time. If you make pasta using egg dough,
yeah,
that takes like 9 eggs.
Yeah, that's true.
Pasta, I didn't realize, is mostly eggs.
Yeah.
Or baking. Mm-hmm. But really, right now, we end up giving a lot of eggs away. And the hope is to eventually sell eggs, but we just haven't come up with a delivery system yet.
Sure. Do the eggs taste different than store-bought eggs, or are they just all kind of the same? I just wonder if there's like a variety of flavors to the eggs from different kinds of chickens.
I think the eggs taste way better than store-bought eggs. Uh-huh. I can't tell the difference in taste from chicken to chicken. I mean, the eggs they lay, it depends on what they're eating, right? Mm-hmm. So if they get a lot of access to like weeds and grass and plants, that definitely makes their eggs better. Mm. So in the wintertime, maybe not so good because they have to rely mostly on feed.
Okay.
But they're just fresh, right? We're eating eggs that the chicken laid this morning.
So that's true.
Tastes better.
Yeah, fair enough. Good point. Or it's like you just feed them, if you could do an experiment and just feed only one chicken, only apple cores, and the other only, I don't know, carrots or something, and do a taste of, I'm just kidding. That's like way too nerdy
to do. It might work. So birds can't taste the spiciness of peppers.
Oh.
Whatever it is in peppers that makes them spicy, birds can't taste it.
Capsaicin, so I think.
Guy, yeah, capsaicin. So there's a guy in Australia that feeds his chickens these really hot peppers.
Uh-huh.
And the yolks of the eggs are red and spicy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to try that so bad.
It's pretty cool.
I know that Nora's parents, who are also fans of the podcast, grow habanero peppers over the summer. So maybe there's a connect here with the chickens.
Oh, habanero eggs. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, right? I mean, I usually put so much like salsa on my things anyway. I just might as well get a spicy egg. But what's the best part about raising chickens?
The best part is probably the eggs.
Oh, really? Okay.
But they're also good company. This summer when I was really busy, sometimes I would just go out to the chicken yard and hang out with the chickens for a little bit. It's very calming. It's very peaceful out there. They're just pecking and scratching around, and they're fun to be around.
Do you see any of them like play with each other or like taunt or any of that kind of interaction?
I wouldn't call chickens playful. They definitely fight with each other.
Oh, okay.
There is a pecking order. Yeah, they like to maintain who's in charge.
Okay.
So the chickens started doing this thing after we got them where I would come up to pick them up and they would like bow. They would squat down to the ground. And I was like, what is going on? What does this mean? And apparently it's a sign of chicken submission. So they're bowing to me as head chicken.
Oh my God. Really? Because I was going to guess it's like, oh, they're ready to just like start eating because they know that you have the food. But I had no idea that you're the head chicken.
Yeah, I'm the head chicken.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Okay. If you were to expand your chicken breeds, what is a chicken breed that you would want to own one day?
Oh, that's a great question. I'd probably want to get one of those like Asian chicken breeds. I can't remember what they're called, but they're the ones that have like really big tails and lots of colors. Brahmas, that's what it was.
Oh yeah, these guys. Yeah, so they're like, they got kind of a bluish, greenish back tails and their fronts are red. And their neck and tops are a little bit white, but their bellies are brown. Those guys, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. Yeah. No, those are beautiful birds.
And eventually, we'd like to expand how many chickens we have so we can actually sell eggs at farmers markets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And really, they sleep so close together, and we have such a big coop that we could easily have 50 or 60 chickens in there.
Wow.
The tricky thing is that when it comes to be winter time and they can't really go outside, it would just be too crowded. Dirty in there. During the summertime when they're just sleeping in there, it's fine. But right now when they have to spend all day in there.
Yeah.
16 of them, they have enough space right now. But if we even had like 30, they would start to get pretty crowded.
Yeah. And that's probably, unfortunately, what happens to so many of the chickens that are actually in these huge industrial poultry farms and stuff like that. Right? That's what people are always saying, cage free and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah. You want the chickens to have a nice life.
Yeah. I bet your chickens are very happy that they call you Top Chicken.
Yeah, Yeah, they live a very good life. Yeah. They have lots of space to run around.
Good. Well, thanks for sharing your chicken journeys with me. Can I ask you two final questions?
Yes.
What is one piece of advice you would tell your younger self about entering and pursuing a music career?
Don't take yourself so seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely did that for myself too. Way too seriously.
Laugh at yourself. Find some humor in it. Find some fun, right? It's way better.
Take an improv class.
That's why I think... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Be silly. Yeah.
And as we enter a post-pandemic world of some sort, what elements of your musical pandemic life would you want to continue and what would you want to shed?
I mean, as we kind of start going back to playing in public spaces again, I think just playing with people as often as possible. Mm-hmm. I always find that to be more fun, especially when you can collaborate with new people and just finding new projects to work on. I think aspects I'll probably shed would probably be doing a lot of solo work. I just don't really have any interest in doing solo songwriting or solo music making anymore. I think it's a very hard path.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more challenging. I find it way more fun to collaborate with other people.
Yeah, I mean, I clearly...
Especially after being so lonely, right? Yeah. After being locked up by yourself for so long.
No, totally. All right. Are there any platforms or websites for listeners to learn more about you or any upcoming projects? Well, or at least the albums, again.
Okay, I have a website, juliaflohberg.com, or you can find Lady Spruce on Bandcamp, ladyspruce.bandcamp.com. And you can find some of Delphia's music, some live recordings on Spotify.
Yeah. All right. And if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your review will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make Sushi's day. And it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become part of the Hayden Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/HaydenMusicStand. Our social media handle for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is @HaydenMusicStand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, HaydenMusicStand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize a piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. The link is in the description of each episode. And now we'll add, since it is on Spotify, we'll add your albums to the playlist so people can know exactly where to find it.
Great.
Julia, thank you so much for joining the show today.
This was really fun, Patty.
Thanks. And thanks for listening. Say bye, Sushi.
I would have to look up what the actual name is.
Okay.
But that would be kind of fun.
Let's see. Asian chicken?
Yeah, you're looking.
Yeah, whoops. No, like no, see, here's the problem looking up Asian. Yeah, I was going to say the problem with looking up Asian chicken on Google is that it gives me all these recipes for sesame chicken or chili chicken or like the.
Oh, yeah.